You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to episode 55 of the Archaeology Show. I'm Chris Webster, your host, and today I'm joined by Richie Cruz. This is a replay of episode 53, which I believe we did on New Year's Eve of 2018, of the You Call This Archaeology Show, which happens live on Facebook. So if you want to check that out live, go to facebook.com/archpodnet and like the page, and you'll be notified when we go live. You can ask us questions and interact with us during the show. So for now, enjoy this episode of the You Call This Archaeology Show with Richie Cruz and Chris Webster. On to the show.
Oh, shoot. All right.
So anyway, while Richie messes with that, welcome to episode 53 of You Call This Archaeology. That's a whole year's worth of episodes in like a year and a half.
Yeah, which is crazy to me.
Which is good, though, because like you've been working quite a bit, and you know, you're about to be gone for another almost 20 days, and that's an awesome thing, because it means you're up and running, you know, the whole point.
Thank God. And not only just up and running, but I can actually put money in the bank.
Go figure. In the wintertime, in December, January, you're putting money in the bank. You're in the 1%er now.
And it's all because of a quirk. It's because of the way they changed Nevada unemployment.
Yeah.
You know, for people at home who are watching, every state obviously does it differently. But Nevada, you remember, you just used to have to like make that fake spreadsheet of companies you quote unquote applied to. Whereas now they make you actually put contact info and dates and what happened.
Yeah.
And like, you know, website addresses. That way you prove that you applied to at least 3 jobs that week.
That's right.
And the job I'm at now was a quirk.
At least we don't have to have like, God, what were we watching? Some kind of movie or something the other day.
Yeah.
It was in New York City, and I would assume they did their research on this, and I would assume that other states are like this, but you actually had to have your wherever you interviewed, you had to have them sign a sheet of paper.
Really?
Yeah. So we don't have to do that. You know, we just have to report that we checked 3 companies, and you know, you can even do it on the phone, and that's all we have to do. But these guys had to like have them sign a thing and probably fill out information saying, was this company you interviewed here? Here's why you didn't get the job, and then bring that into your employment agency once a week. Like, they're really strict about it. But they're really strict about it because people are totally screwing them on it. You know, so there's that.
I also feel like in this state, they're used to people having seasonal jobs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they probably are because of how the weather is here. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Should we start with the weather today?
Let's go ahead. It's super cold.
It is like, oh, my God. It's like, today is the first day it felt like winter.
It's hot coffee cold.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's also soaking through my winter boots cold. Like, normally that never happens.
It's that kind of cold. I walked in this morning. You walked here. I walked in about 8 o'clock this morning, and it's that kind of cold where it just kind of gets into you. It doesn't really come out for a little while when you get to where you're going, you know, and I got to drink some hot coffee or tea or something to really soak in the inside.
Oh, my God. And, you know, where I am right now, they're like, oh, you should bring all your winter gear. You know, it's all like, it's all on the other side of the Sierras.
Yeah.
And it's like, my God, this is like California winter. Which means not real winter.
Right.
Not like, you know, I mean, my God, try spending a winter in Ely.
Yeah. There's definitely worse things. Like, I was looking at a project I'm supposed to be doing in Elko, Nevada. And the permit from the BLM came in just after it snowed the first time. Like, the real heavy snow the first time.
Oh, this was like, what, last year?
Yeah, just like a month ago.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think it was around Thanksgiving time frame. They got their first like solid snow. They've had dustings of snow out in Elko, but they got like a foot of snow overnight, right? Or over a weekend. And I've been talking to my representative out the mine. She's like, no, this isn't going anywhere till April.
Oh, wait. So you got your curation permit?
Yeah, I got my BLM permit. I got the curation agreement. The BLM permit's good to go. I still haven't turned in the specific fieldwork authorization for this project.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, there's no hurry. Like, there's no way I'm going out there before probably March.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have a string of warm days over, you know, over freezing for that snow to go anywhere.
And the sun actually has to hit it.
Yeah, but they're always getting new snow as well. Like, it's supposed to rain here in Reno in like a week and a half, which means snow in the Sierras, snow in Elko.
Yeah.
So, am I pointing the right directions?
Maybe.
Probably not. Anyway, I think snow in the Sierras, snow in Elko.
Yeah. Oh, well, it depends.
Yeah.
You know.
Well. Anyway, one thing, you know, you and I were just talking about we went to coffee bar here in Reno before the recording today, and they're always super packed even on New Year's Eve, which is pretty great. That's another thing. We're recording this on New Year's Eve, 2018.
Yeah.
Last day of 2018. So tomorrow is, of course, January 1st. But anyway, we recorded the CRM Archaeology podcast yesterday, and it'll be out Wednesday, January 2nd. So look for episode 154 if you want a more in-depth discussion of this. But one of the things we talked about was working yourself out of a job, and it's from several perspectives. From the perspective of, like, let's say you're working on a survey and you've got a finite number of acres to survey, and your crew chief in the last week is like, you know, let's haul ass, let's get this done. What's the incentive? What's the incentive for temporary employees to get it done quicker when you're just going to be unemployed that much quicker? Now, if they're putting you on a new project right after that and you already know that, then maybe you don't care. Maybe you want to prove yourself and show that you're a good worker and you can get this done quicker. Maybe get hired next time, you know, because that also can help. If you show that you're a fast and efficient worker, you can be more likely to get hired on. But you also are working yourself out of a job, you know, because you're only there as long as they have work. So, but then we also talked about it from a more interesting perspective to me now at this current point in my life. Because I'm not really a field tech anymore. But the other perspective was basically the industry working itself out of work. And the industry becoming efficient to the point of we're working other companies out of work because it's taking fewer companies and fewer people to do the same amount of work and different types of things. So it was just a really interesting perspective on that.
Well, oh my God, I was just thinking about it. Like right now, it just occurred to me. Like in the olden days when you were building a car, you know, you had to have the person, you know, like there are all sorts of little jobs that are now handled by robots, like painting. Like cars, you know, believe it or not, in the super olden days, cars, you know, you had to get the car to the paint booth and had to hand rub and hand sand everything. And now it's just done by a robot. And people are like, no, these robots are going to take our jobs and everything.
Yeah.
And yet, there's still plenty of people employed in the car industry. And maybe, you know, maybe it's not exactly the same number, but there's still jobs and they're just different jobs.
Yeah.
That's like what I was pointing out to you earlier.
Yeah.
You know, like, so maybe you're not going to be the classic field tech who just like digs all day, but you might still be able to find another job in this industry.
Well, that's, let me get to that in a second.
Yeah. Because
that's very interesting that you say that. I brought this up in that show.
Yeah.
I want to acknowledge first, though, because when people join, I want to acknowledge them.
Yeah.
Stacy Camp joined. She's fresh off a trip to China.
Really?
Which I've been following her on Facebook. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. I'm not sure what she was doing there. I didn't really pay attention to that too much. I think it was a archaeology-related thing, but
neat.
It sounds like pretty cool. And also Chris Curran joined. And Chris Curran, if you're interested in podcast audio at all, Chris Curran teaches the Podcast Engineering School. Look up Podcast Engineering School, and we'll throw that up on the website. But I took a professional audio podcast audio engineering course from him in the fall of 2017.
Oh, was it that quickly ago?
It was a long time ago now.
Yeah,
and it transformed how I edit podcasts, my entire workflow. And it was just, I can't recommend it more. I mean, it's an expensive course, but it's worth it. All the good courses are going to cost you some money.
You know,
totally virtual and a good idea.
One of my favorite microphone review channels on YouTube is also one of his students.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know who you're talking about, too.
Yeah.
He's had him on his pod because Chris Curran has a podcast called, I think it's just called Podcast Engineering School. I know it's just in my feed. But if you look that up, it's the same logo he has here.
Oh, really?
And that's a great podcast. If you just want to geek out on audio, it's a great podcast, you know, because he's a guy who came from, you know, like the recording industry. He's worked with all the big name artists. He's edited podcasts. Yeah. He got into podcast after he already knew what the heck he was doing, right?
Yeah.
And then he got into podcasting and realized there was a hole there in the audio editing field and started teaching people how to do it.
Two weeks till the next program.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, he runs these as semesters, or not semesters, but like 7-week programs.
Yeah.
And he only does one at a time because they're on, when I took it, it was on Tuesday from like, I think it was 5 to 7 or something in the evening. It usually went probably, sometimes it went 2.5-3 hours if we wanted to ask questions and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, this isn't a show about the Podcast Engineering School. Chris, if you want to pay for advertising on the APN, then I'm more than happy to entertain that.
See?
But, Carl Fegans is watching as well. So,
welcome
Carl Fegans. Yeah, he's all over the internet. He manages the channel on Facebook, the Fraudulent Archaeology channel. where people can fraudulent archaeology or something like that, where people can put up like BS ancient aliens type stuff that they put up on that they see. Ooh. And then talk about it. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's going to be like my second website that I designed. Nice. After I'm done with my first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
There you go. Back to what you were saying real quick.
Yeah.
About basically finding different skills that you might have and doing different things in archaeology. So one of the things I brought up that we didn't actually just talk about at Coffee Bar was, Carl says, Happy New Year.
Happy
New Year, Carl. But anyway, one of the things we were talking about was, as the industry starts to change, how can these smaller CRM firms, the ones that haven't been purchased by big engineering firms, because that's where everything's going.
Yeah.
I really think that we're going to be down to like 5 or 6 companies that actually do archaeology, and they're going to be huge engineering firms. That's what it's going to come down to, you know, in 10 years. But in the meantime.
Oh, because I was thinking it's going to go.
Audio.
Check wait, hang audio. On. Let me double check.
Lost it again. Yep.
Ha. No, wait.
So
we're back now.
Okay, so our audio's back. Sometimes when we switch web pages, the audio goes out, which is really weird. So that's why I'm monitoring it with my headphones.
Thank God.
Anyway, let me back up for a second because I'm also 30 seconds behind.
By the way, that's my web page.
Hey, there it is.
Yeah, and obviously that's the front end, but the back end, I'm actually working on new stuff.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Hang I still on. Can't hear us, but we are again 30 seconds behind. So
yeah, but we're live on OBS.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And Mishan, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Mishan Thornton joined and says, hello, Happy New Year. How's it going? So
not bad.
Anyway, so looking at archaeology firms, I was saying, listen, you guys need to start thinking outside the box because these big engineering firms, they have their other departments do other things when there's no work, right? Well, we got to do the same thing. Like if you're a pure archaeology firm, what kind of skills does your company have? Well, the most obvious one is GIS. So you can start marketing out your GIS capabilities to other industries. You know, you can say, hey, we do mapping. We do these things. Talk to other agencies. Talk to different people and say, we can do this stuff for you in our off season. You know, we have the time. If you have a lab, you can share out your lab, you know, and not just to other archaeology firms. If you've got measuring and photographing equipment and cleaning equipment and stuff like that, there's other places that might be able to use your lab, you know, for different things.
See, you and I are having different thoughts about this because I was thinking that the CRM archaeology industry is going to become more like coffee shops, where instead of like a Starbucks and a Dunkin' Donuts, you have all these little places that like specialize in like high quality work because the and the barrier to entry is so much lower.
Well, you're right. And, you know, I think we're still kind of thinking along the same line, though, because as I'm here at the Reno Collective, you know, there's probably, you know, 30 different professions here in this building, and people doing different things. And I was like, man, if we could have a co-working space like this, that's basically engineering professionals.
Yeah.
Where we can all work under the same, say, you know, one of the areas within the building would basically be the management of the entire building. So what I mean by that is we'd all be kind of working for the same company.
Oh.
But because you have to do that from a regulatory and a permitting and an insurance standpoint. Oh. But then you have people filtering out that are basically working here and almost freelancing what they're doing. You know, I don't know really how that would work, but just trying to think outside
the box.
So
like a co-working space, except for archaeology and lab space.
Basically for engineering or environmental.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you'd bring in biologists, you'd bring in everybody. And you'd share resources. Like here at the Reno Collective, we have this podcast studio, we have the kitchen, we have the makerspace with 3D printers. you know, you could have, even if you had several archaeology companies or people working in the same space, you could have a room full of screens and pin flags and trimbles and equipment, and you just share it out.
That almost, my God, that almost sounds like a school.
Well, kind of.
Yeah, you know, like an academic program, except, you know, with CRM archaeology and, you know, all the environmental stuff.
Right, right. So we're still on the APN page, by the way.
We are?
I don't know if you wanted to be there.
Oh, I did. But do you want to change it to something else?
Oh, we can just go to the main view.
Oh, for a little while. Hang on. Let's see.
So anyway, that's what the CRM Mark podcast is going to be about. January 2nd, if you're listening to us live, then January 2nd, which is Wednesday this week.
Yeah.
Check that out. If you're listening to this recording, arcpodnet.com/CRM archaeology. Oh, CRM Arc podcast /154. So just go to the APN page and you'll find it.
Yeah.
So Oh, all right. I have a bunch of things on my list. I don't know what you want to talk about next.
Oh, well, there's only one tangent I want to talk about, because I already told you when I want to talk about this two dudes.
Yeah.
But the one tangent I want to go on is, my God, if you are a student or someone, or if you're like your typical CRM archaeologist, you know, your typical field tech, and you're looking for a cheap but good computer, a used ThinkPad, Lenovo ThinkPad, is awesome. I got a pretty decently hot-rodded one, 256 gigabyte SSD and 16 gigabytes of RAM,
nice.
$270, and the, like I was telling Chris earlier at Coffee Bar, the typing experience has to be felt to be believed. Like, there's no way I can even describe it. Like, I almost want to bring it here just to, like, have you type on a little.
You should type on this computer, too. I'd like to see how you think this feels, because they developed that new, for the MacBook Pro, that, what is it called? This sort of, I'm going to get it wrong, so I'm not even going to bother. But there's a new sort of action to the keys that they put on here.
But the crazy thing about it, it's the way they engineered the dampening.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, if you've never typed on a typewriter, I assume most of you haven't typed on a typewriter, there's just a certain way it feels because of the, because of the momentum of the keys going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And Lenovo/IBM figured out a way to make these keys feel almost like that.
Yeah.
With a shorter throw.
Nice.
It's crazy.
Nice.
It's also, for $270, that thing is crazy awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like, thank God. Like, I mean, if my desktop ever went down, I was screwed. But now I have something that's comparable. That's like, you know, it won't render videos or edit videos as fast as my desktop, because it can't, you know. But it'll do for like the 3 or 4 or a week or whatever that my desktop would be in the shop.
Yeah.
Because my desktop is liquid cooled, and I know that those go bad every once in a while.
Right.
I just hope not all over my floor, but then where else is it going to go?
Into all of your components. That's right.
And it's also crazy. Like, Lenovo is crazy about support. They still make batteries for that. They still make parts for it.
Nice.
Unlike Apple, you know, in 5 years, Lenovo's still going to be supporting your computer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. That's a good tip. You know, check it out. Where did you get this computer again?
eBay.
Just eBay.
Yeah. Like, you know, so if you're looking for a cheap, durable computer that's like not going to be crazy slow and isn't a Chromebook, Lenovo ThinkPad.
It's a good tip for field techs, because it's a good rugged, I don't want to say rugged computer. It's not built to be ruggedized, but it's a high-end computer with high-end components, so it's going to last longer.
And more importantly, everything is built to be easily serviceable.
Right.
So it's
right.
Not like, I keep hating to bring up Apple, but the bottom isn't sealed. It's like, you know, everything's still got doors and everything. So,
right.
And the RAM isn't soldered on. The motherboard is made to be replaced. Mm-hmm. And you can even replace the main CPU if you wanted. Yeah, so basically, you know, it's as easily serviceable as my desktop, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, before we go to break, while we're still on tech real quick, apparently Richie told me about these on one of the earlier episodes of the podcast, and I completely blew them off and didn't remember. But during purchasing a few extra things for a little Secret Santa thing for my in-laws, when we were back in North Carolina last week, came across this Pocket Juice by Tsuzumi. T-Z-U-M-I.
Oh, and there are plenty like it.
I'm sure lots of people are doing it. Yeah. This particular one is a 5,000 milliamp hour battery, which means it should charge most smartphones at least once and then a little more.
Yeah.
Probably 1.5 times, give or take, depending on the size of your battery. But the cool thing is, we've talked about batteries before, but the thing I like about this, so it's 5,000 milliamp hours. It's got 2 USB ports on it, so you can, and one of them, they're both fast charging USB ports. So when you plug in, it's like super fast charge to full.
And you really need that for modern phones.
You really do. You really do. And where the charging speed kind of lags these days is in the wireless charging. So that's the one difference between this battery and other batteries. And I'm going to try to hold this up close a little bit.
Oh, wait, it's so close.
See it. But I don't know if you can see this too, but it's also got a digital display.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, to show you how much battery life is left, which I love too, because sometimes they just have like 4 dots or something like that. Yeah. You're like, well, how much do I really have left, you know? But the cool thing about this one is if you have wireless charging capabilities on your phone, my phone is now charging just sitting on top of the battery.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, my hatred of paper is well known.
Yeah.
I hate paper with a passion. But I don't have to worry about it anymore. In my own personal life, I'm pretty much off paper, except for the house I just bought a week and a half ago. I had to sign like 700 sheets of paper, which was painful. But so I'm pretty much off paper, though, in my professional and personal life. Like, we don't have paper anywhere. Like, if you want to write something down at my house on a piece of paper, you're going to be hard-pressed to find it. You can dig through the trash and find some old mail.
Damn.
But now my thing is I'm off wires. Like, I've got the Apple AirPods. You know, now I've got a bunch of these batteries, but every time you go walking outside, you need a battery or something, you've got to plug in, and then it gets caught on stuff.
Oh, wait, have you bought a wireless charger for your truck? Because I know they make accessory ones.
Haven't yet. No. Yeah. And that's coming. That's going to be another thing. But yeah. I've only had the iPhone 10 for a little over a year, so that's my first wireless charging device.
Ah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to when, you know, my iPad and my computer, everything can just wirelessly charge when you just set it down somewhere. And I love it. So,
and you know what's crazy? It's fast. It's interesting that car makers are now ahead of phone makers, because how many new cars now come with integrated wireless charging stations?
Right.
Which is so cool.
Right. All right. Well, let's take our first break and talk about WildNote.
All right. Hang on.
So WildNote, you know, I brought this up on the Sierra Mark podcast that I mentioned, you know, as one of the things Stephen Wagner, who was a co-host on there, that he mentioned was that I was saying that we're in this transition period for digital archaeology because some companies are doing it and some companies are not. A lot of companies are thinking about it, and a lot of companies are like, well, we have smartphones and we have some tablets, so let's use a Google Doc, let's use a fillable PDF, stuff like that. That is digital archaeology, but it's not good digital archaeology, and it's not good born digital data either.
No.
A fillable PDF is not data, right? So, and that's all it is a fillable PDF. So, he was telling me that, well, most companies are at least start trying to solve this problem. And I was like, yeah, I don't think so. You know, I talk to dozens, if not hundreds of companies a month. And I'm like, most of these people are just like with their hands in the air, like they just don't know what to do. Right.
Yeah.
Or they think they know what they're doing. And then when you really talk to them, you find out their solution is not really the most efficient thing they could be doing. Yeah. So WildNote helps fill that gap. WildNoteApp.com is the website. We have a free trial. The free trial is changing a little bit coming up in the first quarter here. I don't know when or how, but it's going to be, but it's still going to be good. And in fact, it's going to get better. So, you know, it doesn't matter when you join, though, because I'm the CRM sales specialist. If you are a CRM archaeologist or working for a company, or hell, if you've got biology or anything else and you happen to find our podcast, you know, we've got built-in forms, but you can use a form builder and do whatever you want. So go over there, check it out. I'll be in communication with you when you sign up, because I contact everyone that signs up that's on the archaeology side, and I will, I'll extend your trial if need be, because we're looking for long-term customers.
Ah.
You know, if your trial is ending in 30 days and you haven't had a chance to use it in the field, I'll just extend it so you can use it in the field, you know?
And more importantly, unlike some of the app solutions I've seen, it's not 5 spreadsheets.
Yeah.
And it's also not something you need a constant internet connection for.
Right. Right.
I mean, I assume that, you know, it just uploads the data once it gets to Wi-Fi.
You actually have to manually do that, which is good. So you can do it one of two ways. You can upload each form individually if you only had a couple.
Yeah.
Or you can just do a sync all and it'll sync everything. And the reason for that is we want you to be in charge of when you use your data, because we don't want you to get back into cell service. And let's say you don't have a great cell plan, right? But we don't want you to get back into cell service and then have it instantly upload 700 photos that you just took, right? I don't want that to happen. So you have to invoke the sync, which I think is a great thing, because maybe you come back in and you stop at a coffee shop and you jump on the Wi-Fi, and then you can upload everything right then. Or you just do it when you get back in the hotel room.
And I also assume it's searchable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that was another thing. Like some of the biologists I was talking to in the project I was on, they're like, we don't know if this, you know, if this particular site has been done. Like, they literally, like, the database we're entering into is not searchable.
We actually just came out with a pretty robust search by, you can search by field within forms. You can really drill it down to search for very specific things within WildNote on the web platform. It's pretty sweet.
And the thing is, everyone I've talked to is looking, I mean, not to like be a co-salesperson, I guess I kind of am.
You're a co-host of the show, so by default.
You know, but everyone I've talked to, literally, they don't realize it. They're looking for something like this, but they don't realize it. It's almost like when people were looking for the iPod, they just didn't realize it. Or when they were looking for the iPhone, but didn't realize it.
Yeah.
Like, there's a need out there and they just haven't met the solution yet.
And that's common. One thing Steve Jobs said back in the day was, and I think he was actually paraphrasing something I believe Henry Ford said, was that the American public doesn't know what it wants or needs until I give it to them.
Yeah.
Like, because it's such an inconceivable invention that, and I'm not saying WildNode is like this, you know, inconceivable invention, although it is pretty much, it is kind of out of the box for all the other solutions out there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different, which makes it really good. But the thing is, you don't realize what you're missing because you don't have any idea what's possible.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, it's hard to not sound too grandiose saying that, but I really think that that's where we're at now with this stuff. So,
well, I mean, think about it. Did people know they needed Netflix before mm-hmm. it came along?
Yeah.
You know, it's like I was organizing my DVD collection this morning and I realized, man, I mean, I still love my DVD collection, not letting it go. But, you know, like the other day I watched Die Hard, you know, I watched Die Hard, just like looked it up all on YouTube because I prefer YouTube, you know, and just like watched it from there.
I don't even own, I don't own anything in my house that can play a DVD.
Oh, neither do I, except for my computer.
Yeah, I got rid of everything. This old computer right here is the only thing I have that'll play a DVD.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Oh, my God. You know what else is awesome? Not to bring back my ThinkPad, but the DVD drive is hot swappable. So I hot swapped in a 2.5-inch hard drive. It's a scratch drive, which is crazy to me.
That's pretty cool.
Well, we should probably finish this up.
Yeah. We're done with the WildNode ad.
Oh, good.
Just go check it out, wildnoteapp.com. If you've got questions, you can email me, chris@wildnoteapp.com. And I'll respond and we'll talk. We'll have a chat. So
yeah,
it's not high pressure sales. You know, we're not trying to get you to do anything. Again, we're looking for long-term clients that want to really change and transform the way their company does business.
Yeah. Like, you know, maybe you no longer want to use 5 spreadsheets to write a 1-paragraph report.
That's true. True. Why would you ever do that? Yeah.
I don't even know what they're doing with these spreadsheets.
I don't know.
It's just like, what are you doing with these? But you know.
Let's move on to something even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Which is I've just got to put this down, but I don't want to go into it too much because I recorded a whole episode about this. But Megan Fox, I believe we talked about her at the last show.
We did.
But now I've seen all 4 episodes. So.
And now you're a fan.
My God. I got to tell you one thing. So if you know what we're talking about, Megan Fox, Legends of the Lost, is the name of the show. It's a 4-episode series that is on the Travel Channel. The Travel Channel, if there's a way to stream that stuff without
paying
extra for it, I'm not really sure how, but
there has to be.
I think you need a cable subscription to log in. So,
really?
Because it's not on Hulu, I'm pretty sure. So anyway, I spent the last week and a half at my sister-in-law's house in North Carolina, and I put this on the DVR because it just came out in December. All 4 episodes did. They debuted them once a week. And I was there long enough that I was able to see all 4 episodes, and I watched them, took some notes. And so if you want a real full synopsis of this, go over to the archaeology show. I think it was episode 54 or something like that.
Yeah.
But just go to archpodnet.com/archaeology and then look for the Megan Fox episode. Cause I went through and I reviewed each episode and then the whole thing as a whole. And you heard that episode. So, but the first one is about Vikings. The second one is about Stonehenge. The third one is about, basically the early peopling of the Americas and the fact that all Native Americans are descended from giants. And then the fourth one.
Oh my God. Just like the redheaded giants of Lovelock.
Yes. and then the fourth one is about, she went totally in a different direction. I thought she would ever go, but the fourth one is about Troy and the Trojan War, and not about the Trojan War specifically, but whether or not Troy actually existed.
Why wouldn't it have existed?
Well, there's a really good reason why it wouldn't have existed, because it was written about by only one person 400 years after the Trojan War was supposed to have happened. And it was Homer writing in the Iliad, which is a book of fiction.
True.
He wrote about the Trojan War and Troy. And honestly, I think there's some good research saying that people have found Troy and proof that the Trojan War existed, although we don't have solid evidence of that. But I'm also like, sure, what if Homer just made it all up?
Maybe, or it could just be an amalgam.
Well, it could be, but I mean, a lot of stuff in the Iliad was made up, right? It was the thing that makes people want to believe it is that he lived in the areas where he wrote about, and like they're able to take descriptions from the Iliad. Let's just say specifically related to the Trojan War.
Yeah,
they know where the island is. They know where the part on Greece is. You know, they know where these areas are. They can practically like see the mountain ranges that he's talking about and the different land formations. Because he was probably there when he wrote it.
Yeah.
You know, he was probably saying, well, if I were to have something here, let's do this. And lots of authors do that. Like my wife is We're watching the Outlander series on Starz, right?
Oh.
It takes place in Scotland initially and then in North Carolina.
Has she ever read the books?
That's why we're watching it, because she read the books first, yeah.
Oh, she's one of those people.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we went to Scotland, we had to go to some places. And this is what I'm talking about. We went to some places that were talked about in the book, right?
But the thing is, Diana Gabaldon fans are crazy, you know, devoted.
That is another story. That is another story. But my point is, we took this fictional book that includes time travel.
Yeah.
And we went and visited places that were discussed in it. Because good authors
will
relate to real things in the world because it makes the story more believable.
Yeah.
Who's to say Homer didn't do the same thing?
Yeah, although, you know, my favorite work of, like, you know, of the ancient world is still Herodotus, and, you know, I would have loved to have seen that on that show.
So, Carl Fegans dropped a link here, which you guys have to go check out, and I'm going to look at it after this show.
Oh, shoot.
Archaeologyreviewed.com is the website.
Oh, hang on.
And he said he reviewed all four episodes over there.
Oh.
I'm real interested in hearing Carl's interpretations of the episodes and what he thought about them.
Let's go see if Google will bring it up.
Carl's a tall man too. He's probably descended from giants, just like we all are. You know. So who knows? But definitely go look at that. Again, if you're listening to this on audio, it's http://thearchaeologyreview.com.
So, hang on, I forgot an E.
And hopefully Richie doesn't lose our audio here in a second, but I won't know for 30 seconds. Keep checking that.
Oh, hang on.
He said there's pretty decent evidence that Homer wrote down what was in oral history. So, you know.
All right. We dropped for a second, couple of seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're live again. So keep talking.
So Carl says that there's pretty good evidence that Homer wrote down what was in oral history, which, if anyone's ever played the game of telephone, and there's a game called Telestrations, which is a sort of like Pictionary combined with the game of telephone.
Yeah.
And we played that in North Carolina. And it's interesting because oral history is not necessarily, you know, a credible source because things change. And that's where one of the episodes of the Megan Fox Legends of the Lost episode was the one on the Americas. She interviewed or she talked to these two Native Americans who they said that when a Native American, when indigenous people, when they tell a story, it's told to them word for word. They retell it word for word exactly as it was told to them.
Yeah.
So their assumption that is that if you're listening, if I'm telling you a story right now of something that took place 1,000 years ago, it's exactly how that happened 1,000 years ago.
Ah.
Because the story never changes.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time with that. I have a real hard time with that because details change. People forget things. You know, I mean, it's just... things happen, and even if language changes, if you go long enough, language will change, and the meanings of words will change, and then the interpretations of words will change.
Oh, but those sorts of stories, I feel like, are slightly different. They're more demonic. They're more demonically based. It's almost like it's almost like a song. So you can only change it so much and not lose the structure.
I understand, but they're using this to basically say that this is how we know giants existed, and they existed prior to Native Americans coming to this continent.
See, I
and then
feel
they
like,
interbred with Native Americans.
See, I feel like that's the, you know, this show is just another long line of like people who are just like trying to make it so that Native American people don't have any agency and that they weren't here.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was like all something else. It's just like the way they, you know, the Inca walls were built by, you know, built by aliens.
Right.
Or the pyramids were built by aliens. Like no one who is not white, you know, brown people can't do anything.
Right.
You know, by themselves.
Well, to the credit of the people in that episode on that Legends of the Lost show, they weren't necessarily saying that all the monumental architecture and mounds and things like that in this country were built by these pre-Native American people.
Yeah.
They were just saying that they existed. But they were a warrior race. Like the guy even mentioned that the 10-foot-tall, you know, 10-foot-tall giant would rip the head off a Native American warrior and then drink from his blood. I think... even just having an extra 3 feet on somebody doesn't mean you'll be able to rip their skull off their head, off their body.
Does.
But, you know, plus I'm also reasonably certain that Arnold Schwarzenegger at 60 plus years old or 70 plus years old, whatever he is, could probably rip my head off, though. You know, I'm pretty certain of that.
Maybe.
I don't know if you need to be 10 feet tall to be able to do that, but anyway, I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. But this show, Megan Fox, Legends of the Lost, the thing I liked about it, the thing that irritated me about it is I actually did learn some stuff from it. Like I was fact-checking throughout the episodes, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, that's true. I didn't know that. That's cool. But the biggest problem I had with it was she was basically she came up with a thesis for each episode. Like for the Viking one, it was basically her small thing that she was trying to look at was, were women warriors alongside the men? Because it's commonly assumed that they weren't, you know? I mean, I don't think people are saying 100% that they weren't, but it's commonly assumed that they weren't.
Why not? I've watched the movie Brave.
Well, I know, right? So I think there's always one-offs in any circumstance. Like maybe most men were warriors and most women were not. They were other things. Definitely contributing members to society, not just people watching the house.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that some men stayed home, and that doesn't mean that some women didn't go out and rape and pillage. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just, you can't think in absolutes in any sorts of thing. So,
yeah.
But what she would do is, that was her thesis, so she would interview this person and this person and this person and this person, and throughout, she would say things in her narrative that she wrote in the voiceover narrative. She'd be like, well, I've now uncovered evidence that this is this or this. And I was like, you haven't uncovered anything. You're talking to people who have actually done real work, and you're making these inferences based on what they've done. That's not work. That's just your opinion based on things that you basically read or talked to.
No, she's not cheating. Like, you know, without her genius, no one would have ever been able to connect any of these dots. Ever.
My God. I mean, I was like, where, if this is some new earth-shattering thing that you came up with here, like Stonehenge was actually a place of healing in an ancient hospital, she called it. See? If this is actually new, where are you publishing this? Is this just a TV show? Or are we going to see it in American Antiquity next year?
She can't publish it. The Illuminati. No, the archaeologists are going to kill her.
I don't know how to say that. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's another thing she would do throughout the series was she would talk to somebody who had some far out there theory.
Yeah.
And she would say with this irritating smirk on her face, so, you know, what does the rest of the scientific community think about what you're saying? And they would, of course, say, well, it's not very well received. And she would be like, I know. That's because you're right and everyone else is wrong.
See?
You know, which, don't get me wrong, that could be true. Like, people have been, you know, come up with theories before in all different kinds of fields, and they were an outlier, but they proved to be right.
See?
You know?
Like, yesterday I was, like, watching this YouTube video.
Yeah.
And you remember, it was 2 years ago, where they thought that, you know, where they thought that Hillary Clinton and her operatives were stealing children from that pizzeria and that dude went die. Yeah. And there are people who are literally still twisting the narrative. Well, weren't literally stealing children from there. They were just using it as a scouting spot and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And Hillary is the most evil person in the world and all the Clintons should die, you know. So people can, like, make any, you know, people literally crave narrative in such a strong degree.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't, you know, history doesn't work as a narrative.
I know. History's fluid and it changes.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like technology isn't a straight narrative. It's not like, you know, Steve Jobs descended from heaven and, like, brought us the Mac.
Wait, what? Come on now.
I know.
Yeah. He's just gone back up into the ethereal plane to invent more things. He'll be back.
By the way, have you read his daughter's book?
I have not. I heard about it when it came out, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a tell-all.
Yeah, I really want to read it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't read it.
Ooh.
So.
Oh. Huh. Should we get to what I was going to talk about?
Yes, do it.
Oh, my God. Alrighty, so I'm not going to discuss too much, but, you know, there's this company, and they had a little turnover, and I thought they were really, very illustrative of sort of like the two sorts of field techs you might run into.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll talk about the first one, because it relates back to the technology we were talking about.
Yeah.
There was this, like, old school dude, and apparently he was really good on the ground. Like, you know, he knew all his archaeology stuff. Like, you know, he could find anything he wanted. Et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And he was dropped in this job where he suddenly had to use, like, you know, digital technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't even realize that a phone could take a photo. You know, he didn't realize that tablets were for, he didn't even know what a tablet was for. He just thought it was just some expensive device.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't realize, you know, you could type up reports and stuff on it. And he was so freaked out by the job, you know, because he was one of those old school field techs who was like, I hate doing paperwork. You can do that. I'll just dig all day. And obviously, you know, there's always people who are like, oh, thank God, I'll just screen and do the paperwork and you can do the digging, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to run into people like that.
Yeah.
I call them idiots. But
there's words for them.
That too. But it's just like, you know, thing is, I feel like those days are like coming are basically drawing to a close. Like, there is going to be a point. We are, like you said earlier, we're in a transition. We're at a point where you have to at least know some basics about technology mm-hmm. in order to keep moving forward. You know, there are certain companies, you know, I'm not going to mention names, but there are certain companies that are just, like, lost in time. Like, my God, when did you write this form? Or like, we can't change that form. We've been using that since 1996.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, especially in this town of Reno. I'm not going to mention names, but you know.
It shocks me how resistant to change people want to be. I don't even know where it comes from. Like, what are they afraid of?
You know.
I mean, they're probably gun shy a little bit because they've been had things promoted to them or proposed to them
yeah.
in the past that didn't work out or, you know, something like that. I've heard so many people talk to me about file formats and how, you know, obviously we need archival file formats. We have to be able to access your digital data in 30 years, yeah. right? In the same format. Well, it just takes a different sort of curation to be able to do that. And file formats were changing so much in the 70s and 80s and even up into the 90s.
Yeah.
Where people are gun shy on storing their data because they've got these old disks and these old hardware and this old software that is no longer accessible because it was changing so fast.
PDFs. And by the way, but you know what's crazy? I didn't even realize this. That computer companies, that there's now software that can take your PDF and turn it into an actual editable document.
Yeah.
Which is super awesome to me, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Yeah, and you got to be careful with some stuff like that because, like, there's definitely... software, like you said, where you can read a PDF or even OCR and read like any document that you scan.
Yeah.
But when you bring that into something like Microsoft Word, you almost have to strip the formatting and redo it again because it'll do these weird tabs and all this stuff to get everything to line up just right. That's one thing they haven't quite solved yet is...
One day, though.
One day they will. You're right. Yeah. Just to make it smarter and line everything up using the proper tools.
Yeah.
Because right now it just uses basically tabs and tables and spaces to put everything where it needs to be.
Yeah.
Which makes it really hard to modify.
You know,
even WildNotes Word export kind of does that a little bit. Like you can export any of our forms as a Word document, even something you just created. You can export it as a Word document, but the formatting is still going to be a little bit interesting. You're at least going to have a Word document. Don't get me wrong, if that's what you want. But the formatting is going to have to be something that you play with a little bit. Yeah. Still quicker than creating it yourself. But you know,
oh, like so many of the companies you've been talking to.
Almost every single one. It's refreshing when I talk to a company that is just like, listen, I don't care what we're doing. We just need to do something. You know, I trust you guys. Let's do this.
Well, remember the olden days when it was super cool to make your own website, like, you know, actually make it, like learn HTML and like coding and all that stupid stuff. And yet, you know, a company would fire you today if you tried to suggest that instead of just doing something plug and play.
Well, it's like anything else. You got to use the right tool for the right job. Yeah. You know, if you just need a website to do, well, it's like, I hate to bring it back to WildNote, but it's like anything digital or work vehicles or your phone or whatever the case may be. You first list out what you need something to do.
Yeah.
What problem am I trying to solve? And then you find the thing that will solve that problem.
Yeah.
And for most companies, a simple Squarespace site would solve their company needs. But if they want to do more dynamic things to their site, if they want to have like a interactive map tool or maybe some other things, they should probably go with a WordPress site. You know, with better plugins and things like that. But if you just have a landing page with a contact form, don't overthink it.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to say that, you know, there's like off-the-shelf solutions that people like, you know, why are they so resistant to off-the-shelf solutions for this?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you were saying that tweet, you don't build your own truck. You know, you're not going to like make your own foundry to make your own Marshalltown trowel. Yeah,
you're probably going to let someone else do that.
You know, like why would come, why, I mean... It's like baffling to me personally.
Yeah. Well, that brings us up to our second kind of break. A little late into the show, this we're about 43 minutes in.
Oh.
But let's talk about the APN.
Oh, whoops! I got the wrong thing.
You might be bringing up Team Black, but
I was.
I decided we need, as we go into 2019.
Yeah.
I need to make the APN more sustainable, which means I need the APN to bring in some money. I know. It's just I can't afford to spend all my time doing everything anymore, and nobody works for free. So the APN needs to bring
you
money. Well, I work for free. Yeah. The APN needs to bring in some money so we can hire out some of these tasks and keep it going.
Yeah.
The biggest one is editing. You know, that's the most time-consuming task that I have. I spent 3 hours this morning editing the Sierra Mark Elder podcast.
That's it?
Yeah. I mean, it may have been a little longer than that, but I'm also pretty quick at it these days too.
Well, I mean, just coming from video editing, to me, that's like crazy fast.
Yeah. Well, for audio editing, that's about standard.
Right.
You know, it's an hour long show and it would think it get produced out to about an hour and 1 minute long.
Ooh.
And, took like I said, it took me about 3 hours to edit. Cause I had 5 independent tracks. I recorded the ads. I mean, all that stuff takes time. So, the reason I'm telling you this is twofold. One, there's two ways that you can support us. You can go to arcpodnet.com/members and become a member of the APN. You'll get some perks on that. $5, $10, $20 a year, a month, sorry, with 30% off if you go for an annual, if you go for an annual membership.
Yeah.
But also advertising. I want to advertise for companies that are doing things that we support, you know? So if you're listening to this and you run a field school or you've got a book coming out or you've got, you know, a company, a CRM firm, something like that.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be, if you want to advertise with us, it's around $125 or so for a 30-second ad on one show.
Oh, really?
And you're guaranteed to reach at least 5,000 to 6,000 people on that first show because most of our shows have that as a minimum reach.
Ah.
If you sponsor the entire network, it's a little more and you can hit 130,000 people in a month.
Yeah.
So check us out. Yeah. Here's the levels right here for membership. You've got supporting, standard, professional.
Wait, you can just do a sponsorship right on the website?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because I'm obviously a little ahead of you. So I'm actually looking
Right. Yeah. So you went to ads and sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can just sponsor at a different level right there. We had somebody donate us $25 the day before Christmas.
Ah.
Yeah. So they just went right there. You hit individual support and you can just do right there. You can purchase an ad. Oh, $150 on those. You can purchase an ad. And when you say quantity, that's how many episodes do you want to purchase?
Oh, so it's $150 an episode?
Per episode, yeah.
Ah.
So, which is way cheaper than most advertising out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's $150 per episode. And per episode, like I said, on most of these shows, you're guaranteed to hit at least 5,000 to 6,000 people first off, right off the bat. And then triple that as you look at what's called the long tail. So your episode will be on there for, you know, years to come. And people will still hear your ad.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Wait, so if I want to make my own Ancient Aliens conspiracy website and advertise on the APN?
I'm not going to say I'm going to allow that, but it just depends. So.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, so if I want to come up with my own blue apron, then that's all right.
That's fine. Sure. Yeah. I would love to say we're going to curate what we get for advertising, but I think early on, we probably would take just about anybody as long as they're not offensive and, you know, still family friendly because our podcasts are.
Yeah.
So as long as it still fits those sort of metrics, we'll probably advertise. And I would love to say we're turning people away at the door and only allowing ones that in that, you know, that we support. So, but in the meantime, you know, I mean, we need to sell, honestly, to be sustainable and to be able to hire out the editing, we probably need to sell about $3,000 worth a month, you know, which is quite a bit.
Well, I was going to say that's like, you know, I mean, that's not terrible.
It's not terrible, but it still is complicated and it's hard to get that. So.
But you just reduced the number of steps.
Yeah.
You know, this is like crazy easy.
Yeah, it should be easy.
Yeah.
Once you add one of these ads to your cart, you know, I'll basically contact you and get your bullet points and record your ad for you.
Ooh.
And,
wait, they can't record it themselves?
They can if they want, but most people don't have the ability to do that.
Oh, that's true.
So if you do, you can send us your ad ready to go.
Yeah.
And we'll just drop it in. But if you want to just have us record it and make it,
yeah,
and then put some music behind it and drop it into the shows or do a dynamic ad like this one here.
Yeah.
It might be in a little more charge for that if we do it like this, but you know, it just depends. So,
cool.
Anyway, yeah. If you're listening to this right now,
yeah,
then the advertising works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you're listening to this now, you could be listening to an ad for your own thing. And so are all the other people listening to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
anyway,
that's all I've got for the APN stuff.
Cool.
We will be at the, if you want to see us in person, the next conference the APN will be at is the Society for California Archaeology meetings in March in Sacramento, California.
Hopefully I will be there. It's, you know, it's up in the air right now.
Yeah. I've got two people actually coming to run the APN booth.
Really?
Yeah. Bill White.
Oh.
Of the Sierra Mark podcast and Jose Cervantes, who's one of our marketing volunteers.
Oh, that dude.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Are you going to set up the, you know, are you going to set up the tablets on the wall and then, you know, have so people can listen?
I don't know. We'll figure something out. I haven't really thought it through yet. So
right.
That's a good idea. I need headphones for that.
Yeah.
You know, multiple headphones.
I mean, you can get them for like, what, $5 from Walmart?
Yeah, that's true. I don't like buying junk though. So we'll see. I'm going to shop at Walmart.
Well, I mean, I'm always surprised at how good technology has gotten, like how much the price has come down. Like, you know, the other day I needed some emergency Bluetooth headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, obviously I got the earbud ones, but I was thinking, man, I don't want to lose those in the forest. So I wanted some regular, like, two earbud wired ones that are also Bluetooth.
Yeah.
$9, $9.99. They're not, obviously, they're not as good as, like, my earbuds or, like, my really high quality ones that I use when I'm running.
Yeah.
But they're serviceable. Like, for podcasts, they're serviceable.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, they sound a little, like, a little low, you know, they're doesn't have the dynamic range, you know, for music, but for podcasts, it's perfectly all right. And I can latch the other end into, like, you know, I can basically latch it through a buttonhole.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the whole reason I wanted, like, wired ones.
Nice.
Like, you know, or at least ones where they're wired between the earbuds.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. $9.99.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Ha.
All right. Ooh. Last 10 minutes of the show. What are we covering here? What other topics do you have on the slate?
Oh, my God. We should talk about the other kid.
Which other kid?
You know, the one who also quit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go into circumstances, but this person was very, you know, this person was on a job, and Chris and I were talking about this job. You know, I'm not going to mention the job or the company, but I will say it was a very nice company. It was a very good job with good wages, and this dude threw a fit because it wasn't cushy enough. You know, and basically told off the owner and quit because, you know, oh my God, this is like, you know, slavery. This is that. And like, literally, if you gave this job to any experienced field tech from the Midwest or from the Southeast, they would literally think they had died and gone to heaven.
Yeah.
And so I just want to say to students right now, temper your expectations about what being a field tech or being in the field as a professional archaeologist is like, because, you know, because this isn't, you're not a lawyer. You're not a stockbroker, you know, you're not going to get $100K a year and, like, you know, all the benefits and, like, an executive, like, you know, executive bathroom key.
Right.
There's
right.
no such thing. I
would add to that, too, and say that if you happen to land a job like this, that's some would consider super easy and relatively cushy and, you know, with a nice flexible schedule. They don't come along very often. And if you happen to land something like that early on in your career.
Yeah.
And you don't really know what else is out there. I'll tell you what, just stick it out because you'll realize later on how good you had it.
Yeah.
You know, because there's way worse jobs.
Yes. Oh, my God. You and I both know that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely worse jobs. So,
you know, and not just like worse jobs, but worse places. Like, you know, you could be freezing your ass off in Virgin Valley in northern Nevada right now.
Yeah.
Like I was.
I'd say anytime you think it's too good to be true and you're just sitting at a job, just... You know, stick it out for as long as you can and just do that job. Even if you're like, man, I thought I was a scientist. I thought I was these things and that. And I want to do archaeology, but all I'm doing is sitting in a truck every day. Tell you what, take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Learn something. Do like, something.
Yeah. That's what I do.
Yeah. Anytime you have a monitoring job, you really need to pay attention when you're monitoring. Like when you're actually doing monitoring, you're the only person out there. You're the only archaeologist. The construction people will take advantage of the fact that you're not paying attention if you're not, and they'll just blow through something and not tell you. So you have to be on it. But there's also a lot of times when you just have to wait.
Yeah.
And use that time to do something constructive with your time because you're not going to get that again.
Yeah. Also, I was just thinking about, I would also encourage people who are going to CRM Archaeology to get a regular person job when you're an undergrad and see what it's like to work in the regular workforce. Because like, you know, it still gets to me. Like there was this company advertising a pretty decent job this summer. And this person said, that's like slave wages. Like, how can I live on that? And someone was pointing out that's like a little over $3,000 a month, you know, including paying per diem. And, you know,
which isn't terrible.
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, ask your average person who works at a Starbucks and their take home after taxes is $1,600. And they're still paying their rent. They're still like hanging out with friends. You know,
they get a free pound of coffee every week.
That too. But, you know, but like they're still paying off their student loans. They're still like, you know, living on like what essentially, you know, is like half of what your average field tech is making.
Right.
And, you know, suddenly, you know, you realize so many field techs out there are incredibly spoiled and like they just want, I hate to sound so, you know, libertarian or Republican, but it's true. It's just like, dude. Like, try getting a real job.
Yeah.
And then, you know, see how much you appreciate being a field tech.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how many field techs do we know, they get their first job and suddenly their, you know, apartment's got a 50-inch flat screen, you know, and they just went, like, you know, took a vacation to the Bahamas, and it's winter, and suddenly they're like, wait, you're firing me?
Yeah.
You know, you're letting me go?
Yep.
Because,
yep.
You know, like more than once this year I've been interviewed and they're like, you know, do you have plans for the winter? Like, do, you know, do you understand that this is a, this job is a field job and is, you know, you're only employed as long as we can be in the field.
Yeah.
And I'm like, duh.
But who knows how long that could be?
Yeah. Especially here in Nevada.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. And like, you know, in the last interview I did, not only did they ask that, they're like, do you realize that you would be away from home for weeks at a time?
I mean, there's plenty of places in Nevada because we have a lot of mountain ranges, but
yeah.
Because we have a lot of mountain ranges means we have a lot of valleys as well. And most of the valleys don't have snow in them.
True.
Yeah. I mean, most of them are free and clear and you could do plenty of work.
But it's still cold as crap.
Oh, it's ridiculously cold.
Oh my God. And like people think, you know, because it's because of Vegas that this state is like warm, but that's the southern part. The northern part,
yeah,
especially. The northern part, especially when the wind whips up like in Ely.
Yeah.
You know, it might say it's 20 degrees like in your truck, but when you get outside, it may as well be like negative 10.
I will tell you what, I'll never forget. I see it pretty vividly. One of the most miserable cold experiences I had was in Tonopah, Nevada. And we're just recording. We're trying to finish up this mine site. We were bailing for the rest of the day, I think. I don't think we finished a full day because it was starting to snow.
Yeah.
There wasn't any snow on the ground. It was that kind of snow where it was basically directly sideways because the wind was so heavy. So it was cold. It was these light flakes that were snowing. We were still able to do our jobs.
Yeah.
But trying to write, we weren't using tablets at the time, but trying to write down in your field notebook or on your clipboard and have your fingers not like totally freeze up on you, even when they're covered up. I mean, it was just,
yeah.
I mean, it was too much. Like we had one guy that was working with us. He didn't have enough as much padding as I do.
Oh,
he was kind of a skinny guy. And he ended up having to go to the truck and I was actually worried that he was going to get a little hypothermic maybe a little frostbite on his fingers because he had mittens and he couldn't write with them. So he would be taking his fingers out and trying to write and then they would just freeze up.
Like,
dude, get in the truck. Like, I'll finish this.
My God, that reminds me of like, you know, was it, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, it was like our last day in the field, like right, like the 22nd or 23rd.
Yeah.
And my crew chief to me is like, I can't feel my legs. Let's go. Like, literally, he couldn't feel his legs. So we went to, like, you know, the nearest town because, you know, we'd been stopping there for dinner. You know, and we had pie and coffee.
Yeah.
Because he literally couldn't feel his legs. Of course, I was fine because, you know, after the Ruby Pipeline, like, I can deal with any sort of weather.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, out here in the desert, we do, of course, mostly survey, right?
Yeah.
So when you're tromping through, I mean, you're staying warm.
Yeah.
You know, when you're moving, it's easier to stay warm. Of course, your face might get a little cold, but, you know, if you've got a good face mask or even a scarf or something like that, and you're moving and you're continuing to move, it's when you have to record a sight in that it really gets bad. Because anybody that doesn't know, sight recording is a very non-mobile activity. Like, you're standing there. Chuck Hutchison joined at the last minute here.
Yay.
How's it going, Chuck? But anyway, you're standing there trying to describe scientifically features or artifacts or do whatever, and that just takes time.
Yeah.
And you're not moving. And then when you do move, you move 10 feet to the next one.
Yeah. You know, that's when, you know, like, I know some, like, early in my career, some people are making fun of all the field techs that wear Carhartt stuff, but that stuff works.
Oh, it works really well.
Yeah. And it's, like, durable and it's cheap. You know, I've got, like, the, not the complete coveralls, but the overalls.
You need stuff that serves two functions. Yeah. One, it keeps you warm.
Yeah.
And two, it keeps the wind out.
That too.
That's what you need.
And also can't rip like on fences and stuff.
Well, and that's another benefit of Carhartts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like I've worn, I've got this, I think, Columbia rain jacket I've had forever.
Yeah.
And it's relatively thick, but it's not too warm.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, when it's windy out, but not like super cold, like maybe in the 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
Not like teens or below. Usually I'll just have a couple sweatshirts on and long sleeve shirts underneath those.
Yeah.
And that raincoat over the top because it keeps the wind out. But again, the downside to something like that is it's easily going to rip on a barbed wire fence.
Yeah.
Whereas Carhartts probably aren't.
No, because it's I forget what they call it, but the super heavy cotton outer layer that they always use.
Right.
Like that stuff will last forever.
Yeah.
More importantly, if it's really well padded.
Yeah.
And you might accidentally come down on a barbed wire fence because that happens every once in a while.
And you should always wear gloves when crossing barbed wire fence. I've got two two scars, one on either side of my hand here and one on either side of my hand here, and about an 8-inch scar on my thigh.
Yeah.
On the front of my leg, because I was trying to climb a fence and I stepped on the, I put my hands on it on either side of a pole where you should climb over the fence.
Yeah.
And it was a super tight fence. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I stepped on the bottom wire. And as I pulled myself up, it slipped down and
ooh,
it gouged, one of the middle wires gouged up my leg. It was bleeding profusely. And then where I gripped on as it started to fall, it poked me on either side of my hands. It was a bad experience.
Ooh.
That was at the, that was one of the mines in South Central Nevada.
Oh man.
East Central. Real quick.
Yeah.
Rena Martin commented winter archaeology and then tagged, Patrick Alford. Thanks for the tag. And I think she shared it as well. Thanks for
yay,
the share. We like that. And then Chuck Hutchinson said, hey, happy furlough. So he's experimenting the government shutdown right now, I'm sure. Hopefully Trump gets off his ass and gets you back to work soon, Chuck.
He won't.
Yeah, I know.
And the worst part is, you know, you can't apply for unemployment because, you know, technically you're getting paid.
Yeah.
Which sucks. Because, you know, if you've got bills.
Right.
And Christmas time. Come on, dude.
Well, we're at the end of the show.
I know.
So let's put up the end graphic here. And I'm going to run this on the archaeology show.
Yeah.
No, I'm actually going to run this on the Serum Archaeology feed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to drop it in there.
Cool.
Probably some mid-week kind of thing, because we have an episode coming out this week, so I'll probably just drop it so it comes out next Wednesday or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I might save it. Who knows? I might try to let it get a week or two ahead. And try, either way, look for this in the CRM Archaeology podcast feed.
Oh, by the way, this is officially the last show of 2018, because it called last one. Last show.
Well, we thought you were going to be gone.
I know.
Yeah, so this is officially the last show. Yeah.
Because, it's New Year's Eve.
I know. We managed to squeeze another one in.
Woo! So,
also, if you are listening to this live, I will be going live on January 4th at 12 p.m. on knvc.org. Just go to their Listen Live link.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That's Carson City Community Media.
Yeah.
And it's my new radio show. So I'm going live again, and hopefully I'll be able to keep that running for a little while, although I've got to have one more recorded episode after that because I'll be in Missouri at the Society of Historical Archaeology meetings next week.
Cool.
So if you're in Missouri next week for the SHA, come on and say hi. I'll be at the Wild Note booth in the vendor hall. Bill White and I are going to be recording a CRM Archaeology podcast episode on Saturday at some point.
Neat.
So hit me up if you want to be a part of that.
Man, I really want to go to one of these years.
Yeah, Carl said same here. I think he's referring to the furlough because he works for one of the parks or forests. I can't remember. Anyway, so yeah, come by and check it out and listen to the radio show. You can call in. There's a number where you can call in and ask a question. I think if it goes to plan, we're going to be talking about rock art, but I'm not really sure yet. So
Alrighty. Wait, all right. So can they call in and ask how much this bottle's worth or how much this arrowhead they found is worth?
They can ask. I can't guarantee an answer, but they can ask. So, yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us on this last episode of 2018.
Yeah.
As always, go check out Richie's YouTube channel where there's a lot of good videos over there, and that's over at
Happy Archaeology Fun Time. And soon to be happyarchaeologyfuntime.com.
All right. We'll take a look for that. So,
yeah.
Again, thanks everybody, and Happy New Year.
Yeah.
And here's to a bunch more episodes in 2019.
Damn it, we should have talked about New Year's resolutions or something.
Oh, man, those suck, because I never do them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. Special thanks to the band Sea Hero for letting us use their song I Wish You'd Look. Check out their albums on Bandcamp at seahero.bandcamp.com. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning. Keep discovering new things and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.